Oregon state courts cleared about 47,000 residential evictions from people's records last December, as required by a law enacted by the Oregon legislature in 2023 addressing housing and homelessness. In January, the Oregon Judicial Department issued a press release notifying the public that the state law known as House Bill 2001 requires courts to set aside and seal past residential evictions in cases that meet certain requirements. These evictions will no longer show up in background checks, and legally, the evictions never happened. Joining me on the exchange to discuss these tenant protections are my two guests, Oregon State Senator Casey Jama, who co-sponsored the bill. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate you having us today.
And Becky Strauss, the managing attorney of Oregon Law Center's Eviction Defense Project. Welcome, Becky.
Good morning.
Listeners can join the conversation by email at jx@jeffnet.org. So, Senator, you were one of the co-sponsors of this bill, so tell us about it.
Well, thank you, Mike. Again, really appreciate this opportunity. I think House Bill 2001 was a really groundbreaking bill, and particularly was bipartisan support. Both Republican and Democrats and House and Senate have supported and voted for it. So that's a lot of the work that we have to do in Salem to make sure that, you know, we take care of Oregonians. But let me go back a little bit before I speak particularly this bill. We were just, 2023, we're just coming out of the COVID-19 era. And during the COVID-19, really, we strive to make sure that Oregonians who are, struggling to kind of stay their homes. And we did number of bills and measures that we passed to ensure that Oregonians are being protected during the COVID-19. And through that process, we learned quite a few lessons. And the lessons that we learned is that, you know, if you help people when they need the most help, you can actually help to make sure that people are staying in their homes. And that's much cheaper than evicting people and to making sure that they will be able to stay in their homes. So in a nutshell, those lessons really help us to guide the conversation. So how do we implement the lessons that we learned from COVID-19 was part one of the genesis that we put this bill together. And the bill allowed for 10 days 10 days non-payment termination notice for people instead of 72 hours that usually before COVID-19 we had. So it really give people time to get support and the assistance that they needed, and that will help to make sure that they get the, if they have come out seeking for rental assistance, they have the time to do that. So it really, the bill was comprehensive, but, you know, I think overall, that's really why we have done the bill and proposed the bill and making sure that Oregonians stay in their homes. So I'll stop there if Becky have anything to add.
So what I'm understanding is that the bill was created because it's cheaper to keep people in their homes, and it helped extend the notice from 72 hours of eviction to 10 days. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. But also it's the right thing to do in addition to being cost effective, because ultimately what we're trying to do is to protect Oregonians, is to make sure that they stay in their homes.
So it's the right thing to do. I got you.
Yes.
So, Becky, tell us about the Oregon Defense Project.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity. And just want to start by saying thank you to Senator Jama for his important leadership on a lot of these issues. I don't think that tenants would have the protections in Oregon that they have today without your work. So we appreciate it on behalf of our clients. I'm the managing attorney of the Oregon Law Center's Eviction Defense Project. The Oregon Law Center is a nonprofit legal services group, and the Eviction Defense Project specifically, we provide legal help in all sorts of areas, but the Eviction Defense Project, as the name suggests, focuses exclusively on helping low-income renters in Oregon with free legal help when they're facing eviction. And we know that that's incredibly important, more important than ever, as the housing crisis continues to hit our state and the nation very hard. As the senator mentioned, the pandemic put a spotlight on a housing crisis that was already roaring. by the time that COVID-19 hit and around the 2020 benchmark. And things have only gotten worse. So our organization, Oregon Law Center, stood up the Eviction Defense Project during that time. And we started collecting a large amount of data about what was happening in court. So we saw it from, we saw the court process from a holistic perspective, what's happening when we look at the court filings. And then we also saw it day to day when we went with clients to the courthouse. So we had a particularly insightful viewpoint of the housing crisis and the way that eviction impacts people in the housing crisis. And what we're seeing now, even as we're coming out of the pandemic, is that eviction filings are higher than ever. They're hundreds of filings higher than they were pre-pandemic. And I think we can account for that by understanding that population growth in Oregon is more rapid than most places in the country, and we don't have the adequate housing supply to support it. And so the pressure on renters, particularly lower-income renters, hardworking families, seniors, people with disabilities, is coming down harder and harder, so that affordability is much harder to find, but also people who do find themselves in housing see that as very unstable. They're one health incident, they're one emergency away from an eviction process that cycles them into even worse outcomes like homelessness.
Well, Senator, both you and Becky are making the case that this is a humanitarian issue. So help me understand, why was it necessary to create another law to protect renters in need of assistance? Couldn't the state have just convened a conference to have a frank discussion with landlords and find a remedy that satisfied the landlords while also meeting the needs of renters in a dignified manner?
Thank you for the question. I think we did have a conversation with the landlords, and we set up a table to have their input from the bill. So with that said, I think, as I said earlier before, the question definitely is going to be the cost of living increases and the housing crisis that we're facing, as Becca mentioned, is that it's been decades making. We need to make sure that we produce enough housing for everybody, and particularly affordable housing. So at the meantime, that's a long-term strategy. You can't just build a housing overnight. It takes a time to build. It takes time to put the process in motion. So while we're doing that, as Becky said also, Oregonians are struggling to pay their rent because of the cost of living increases, and as well as the other lack of, living wage jobs. So we need to make sure that Oregonians who are struggling have a process and protection that they need to ensure, while they are accessing resources and looking for rental assistance programs, that they are able to stay in their homes. Because ultimately, as I said earlier, when you evict somebody, it really creates havoc in people's lives. It has definitely can increase, challenges around future housing, because if the people have evictions in their record, it will be much, much difficult for them to find a new housing. So it's much, much cheaper and much easier to help people to stay in their homes while you are producing more housing and working on production issues and affordable housing. So I think that's really the premise of this particular bill. And I think I do believe there's the right thing that we have to do to make sure that Oregonians are housed. And I'll stop there.
My guests are Oregon State Senator Casey Jama and Becky Strauss, the managing attorney of Oregon Law Center's Eviction Defense Project. We're talking about an Oregon law requiring the courts to seal tens of thousands of qualified eviction cases and remove them from the public record. So, Senator, you've made the humanitarian case along with Becky. What's the other side? What's the landlord? Point of view? What's their perspective on this?
I can't speak for the landlords, but, the conversations that we had with them is definitely around making challenging for them to ensure that if somebody isn't able to pay their rent, of course that hits their bottom line and makes it difficult for them to someone to be stay in their homes. But also to make sure they are also having challenges around if somebody believes that they have a fiscal record in their system, it's much difficult for the landlords to ignore that. So those are some of the challenges that we heard from them. But I think overall, ultimately, both landlords and advocates as well as the legislators, we had something in common, which really to ensure that we create spaces for people to stay in their homes as much as we can. So that's really the perspective I believe I heard from the landlords.
Becky, I was reading some testimony and in support of the bill, and one of the stories I read surprised me, and that was that in one case, the landlord was going to get the money that they needed or desired, and I think the state was going to pay it, and they wouldn't take it. You testified in favor of this bill. Can you give us some examples of some of the challenges facing the tenants?
Thank you. I think that's the key point here. The takeaway is that the reforms from these measures, you know, policy choices that our legislators make matter, and they've had a huge impact. And the policy reforms in House Bill 2001 were reforms for everyone. They work for tenants and they work for landlords because they promote stability in the housing market. For the tenant, it promotes stability in their homes. For the landlords, it promotes stability in their rentals and it gets them paid. So the primary motive of the law was to make sure that the system was running at the same pace and timeline with the resources available, resources meaning emergency rent assistance, so that when there is rent assistance available, the landlord is ready to accept it and the timeline of the court process isn't running ahead of that, so that the rent assistance doesn't come through before the eviction case is over. That's in part what that bill did. And we've seen huge impacts. As I mentioned earlier, our program, the Eviction Defense Project, in addition to representing low-income tenants in eviction process, we watch the court docket and have a very detailed sense of all the filings and the outcomes of those cases. And what we're seeing is that since the reforms in House Bill 2001, to put just a little bit more time in the process to connect tenants with legal help and with rent assistance so that landlords can get paid and they can stay housed, tenants are 85% more likely to stay in their homes now after these reforms. That's a success for everyone, tenants and landlords.
Well, talk about the number of eviction cases that have been sealed and how many more are expected to be sealed, and what's the qualification?
So, and Senator Jama, I defer to you as well. What House Bill 2001 did with regard to what we call eviction expungement or sealing the records is not that it was not new in the sense that it created new opportunities to seal those records. What it did was create a structure for the courts to automatically engage in that sealing process, whereas before the bill, it was relying on the tenant to proactively fill out some paperwork and request of the court that those records be sealed. And so without looking at the specific eligibility of the details for each of those, what I can say is that the eligibility for that sealing is focused on cases that are resolved, where money has been paid. Everything is kind of worked out with the case. There's not an outstanding issue with the tenant and the landlord. And what it does is allow the tenant a little bit more hope of moving on to something safe and stable in the future. What we know is an eviction record makes it very difficult for a tenant to rent in a further opportunity, which, of course, cycles more people into homelessness.
Can you give me an understanding of what qualifies a tenant for this? And we've got about 30 seconds before we have to take a break.
One example would be a record that's 5 years old or older.
Senator, Can you recap this law for listeners that are just joining us and tell me what's the difference between the law from 2023 and HB 2001 from 2019?
Thank you, Mike, for the question. I think the difference is that, again, as I said earlier, for the goal was here to make sure that we implement some of the lessons that we learned during the COVID-19. And, of course, the law has a couple of things that it has been done. First of all, I think earlier I mentioned that the 10-day non-payment termination notice, which really, again, allows people to have more time to get seek help, to make sure that they have the time that they need to ensure that they have able to access legal access or rental assistance programs that are available to them. The other really things that the bill did also that I actually forgot to mention is that it also created language access requirement to provide access to eviction notices, really making sure people who are speak other language other English to have their own language information around eviction and their rights and responsibilities. It created also timing for eviction proceedings. I think Becky spoke about that well, so I'm not going to go back there. Again, that should be placed extended to ensure that adequate time and access assistance in exploring resolution options for both landlords and the tenants. It did also expansion program that Becky talked about extensively. And I think expansion program, I want to add to that, actually, the Judiciary Department will do every year, I think around December time, to evaluate who is qualified. And I just want to emphasize that it's actually responsibility of the Judiciary Department to evaluate those cases and record those who are qualified for their record being sealed, and also to ensure that that people are able to access if they need to find out whether their cases are being sealed or not. Although the Judiciary Department won't inform the people, the individual tenants, if they think that they qualified, that they can actually contact the Judiciary Department to ensure that they are able to get access to their records. So that's overall what the law did, and the difference between that is, again, has been just implementing the lessons that we learned from COVID-19. So I'll stop there.
Well, I want to dive a little deeper on this point about the expungement that you were talking about, Senator. Becky, you said you had a lot of data. You guys are following this over at the Oregon Defense Project. Can you tell me right now, what I understand, there's been 47,000 cases that have been sealed by the courts, and they're reviewing a lot more by the end of the year. What's the trend? What do you expect? How many more you expect to be sealed? And again, just to reiterate, what qualifies those people who have been evicted to have their records sealed?
Thank you. So from a big picture perspective here, what we know is that an eviction can affect a renter's ability to qualify for another rental and have measurable downstream effects on homelessness, transitory housing, health issues, employment, et cetera. So anything that we can do in the system upstream to protect renters and find them stable housing is a benefit to all Oregonians, honestly. So this piece of House Bill 2001 that you're referencing, the automatic expungement, was just one piece of that larger goal. And it put in place a process for the courts to automatically figure out who is eligible for that expungement protection that already existed in the law, and go ahead and proactively set aside or kind of expunge those records to help those renters be able to stay stable in their housing going forward. What the law applies to, it applies to certain types of eviction. So we're looking at either an eviction where the tenant lost and got a judgment against them, but that was 5 years ago or later. At that point, the tenant has moved on. They shouldn't have this as a barrier going forward, given what we know about the very widespread impact of eviction and being homeless. So that's one thread. The other thread would be an eviction case that ended in a settlement. So maybe the tenant agreed to move out with a settlement agreement. It didn't end in a judgment. Or maybe the tenant agreed to a payment plan that they complied with. All of these other kind of paths that the court process can take under the heading of settlement. And if the tenant complied with that settlement, they did move out, they did make the payment, they did engage in the conduct that they said they would or would not engage in, and at least 12 months had passed since the court's judgment, that would be another thread for eligibility for expungement. So again, these are common sense protections to just streamline, take the burden off the tenant just a little bit from having to proactively know about this, proactively understand whether they are eligible or not, and fill out the paperwork themselves, just put it back on the courts to do this automatic process, which they have set up and what we've seen to be very successful so far.
My guests are Oregon State Senator Casey Jama and Becky Strauss, the managing attorney of Oregon Law Center's Eviction Defense Project. Senator, one of the community leaders who testified in support of your bill was Shannon Vilhauer, executive director of Habitat for Humanity. And Shannon called attention to the bill's focus on preventing homelessness among Oregon's youth. Can you tell me more about that?
No, thank you. I think Oregon youth really particularly face difficult and housing difficult scenarios, particularly those youth who are homeless. I think the challenge that they're facing is not only that they're facing houselessness, but also other host of issues that associated with people being with the homeless, So the bill really focused around making sure that there is a culturally specific, particularly culturally specific programs that will serve the youth who are, in our streets and also in our shelters. And so it also allowed that case management and wraparound services will be provided for the youth, because ultimately, if we invest in the youth and make sure that we create a trajectory for them to access resources and being shifted from being homeless to being housed, their future is much, much brighter than if they stay on the streets and really struggle around homelessness in long time. So the bill really focused around ensuring that the youth has the access to rental assistance programs as well as the wraparound services. That's what the bill did, particularly those who are culturally specific organizations who are providing youth those services.
So, Becky, help me understand the depth of the problem of evictions and homelessness that have impacted Oregon's youth, and what solutions are in place to help young people find that stability that they need to continue their education, whether they're in K-12 schools or in college.
Like the senator mentioned, Oregon has the very unfortunate distinction of being a state with one of the highest rates of youth homelessness. So the work that we're doing on the tenant side, on the eviction prevention side, is among the most important homelessness prevention work that we can be doing right now. We're looking directly at the pipeline into homelessness when we go to eviction court, and we know the solutions to keep thousands of families, youth included, seniors, hardworking Oregonians from homelessness is prevention, significant investments in emergency rent assistance, preserving the very important policy and procedural protections that were put in place by House Bill 2001. Those are some of the things that we can do to help prevent homelessness, keep youth and their families housed, prevent displacement, and really look at this crisis as a humane and effective but emergency response to a very significant problem that we're seeing statewide.
What's the numbers on the number of evictions annually?
We saw a significant spike even post-pandemic. There was an era during COVID-19 where there were some specific protections that kept the filing numbers artificially lower, like, for example, moratorium on non-payment of rent evictions during the pandemic. But since all of those protections have lapsed at the state level, we're seeing filing numbers that are higher than pre-pandemic rates. And again, it's because I think
we saw the pandemic put a spotlight on some of the issues that were already existing pre-pandemic, but things have gotten worse. Populations are growing. Affordability is more difficult. Tenants across Oregon are more and more likely to be rent burdened, meaning that they're paying a significant amount of their income on their rent, and many of them severely rent burdened, which is 50% of, or more of their income is going to rent. That's just not sustainable. And so we're seeing that crunch as the market pressure pushes down. The vacancy rates are low. There's nowhere for people to live that they can afford. And that's pushing into eviction court. And so we're seeing numbers around January statewide filings this year were almost at 2,600 compared to pre-pandemic, where the monthly average was about 1,500.
Okay. And how does that look if we go back 5-10 years?
I don't have that data, but the Oregon Judicial Department might. I think the takeaway here is that eviction filings are higher than they've ever been since we've been tracking at our project, and they don't seem to be getting lower. And so what we can do is focus on making sure that the process is slowed down enough so that tenants can find help when they need it. They can find rent assistance so that rent assistance is adequately funded and they can access that help. Landlords can access it or access it, a referral for their tenants so that they can all get paid and stay stable, and that lawyers are also there to help tenants navigate the process. Those are some significant things that we can do to help address what we're seeing in the spike in the filing.
Okay, speaking of navigation, what should people do who are facing eviction now, or they have circumstances that may in the near future put them in that situation? What should they do, step one?
Absolutely. And I should mention that we've spent a lot of time in this conversation focusing on the filing rates in court. But what we also know is probably about 5 times the number of people who are in court are being displaced before the court process, more upstream than that. So there's about 5 times that number that I quoted who are housing unstable or being displaced because of housing affordability. And so the first thing that people need to do if they're facing eviction is contact 211, or in some cases they're eligible for benefits through the Oregon Health Plan. If somebody has signed up for the Oregon Health Plan, there are rent assistance resources now available. So tenants can call 211 and try to find some emergency rent assistance, or try to find through the Oregon Health Plan some emergency rent assistance to try to catch up. If they find themselves with an active eviction court filing, they can contact our program to see if they can access legal help. And that's at 888-585-9638 for the Oregon Law Center's Eviction Defense Project.
I appreciate that. Senator, we have a minute left, and I'm going to ask you a big question. I need you to give me a short answer. I'm sorry.
Sure.
But the education scores are showing that much of the pipeline of workforce talent in our schools don't align with the needs of high-wage, high-growth, tech-based industry sectors here in Oregon. And that forecasts a lot of low-wage employment, which may lead to more evictions and homelessness. What can be done upstream to mitigate the problem with our youth?
No, thank you. I think ultimately the goal is really eviction prevention program is actually a temporary solution. And the real solution is really creating more affordable housing as well as the increasing housing production. Ultimately, that will long-term goal, but that will solve the problem. But whether it's employment-based housing needs as well as the folks who are youth, all of them will be really struggling if we continue the trend that we are. But again, the goal is really, again, long-term strategies around ensuring that we have housing production and affordable housing. That's really the solution overall the long term. And that's what I'm working with my colleagues to ensure that we focus on that as we address some of the housing crisis that we're facing as a state.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. That's all the time we have. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Becky.
Thank you.
Thank you.